Do you want to learn how to get healthy, perform at your best, and create body composition changes that last? In this podcast, we're going to talk about all things fitness, nutrition, health, and mindset. You're going to learn how to create real results, and most importantly, how to maintain those results in the long run. I'm Johan Vesters.
I'm Christine Ndali.
And you're listening to Talking Nutrition. No, it's coming.
We have a serious problem.
I'm just gonna leave this in too. One day we'll start an episode without laughing.
When we're starting the episode, it's like 5, 4, and like we can't not laugh.
Oh shit! Literally, like the episode that launched today, so Monday, September 5th, like started exactly like that.
Did it?
Did you leave it in?
Yeah. I have to look at
it. I left it in too, yeah. Anyway, what's up? Welcome back. Episode 10 already. Wanted to try a new format today where we kind of touch on common myths, misconceptions, incorrect claims, and then we also kind of get into why it's incorrect, how it really works. But I don't think it should end there. And there's a lot of that on social media, right? Where it's like claim and then someone like debunks it, right? And they kind of shit on the person. It's like, yeah, sure, it's entertaining. But I don't think it always is very helpful if we don't then also educate people on what they should do instead, which is what we're going to do today. So the first one we're actually going to talk about is protein related. I actually mentioned this. I was like, it's such a common one to talk about, you know, for coaches. It's almost like overdone, but we keep getting the questions, you know, the same questions over and over. And this is something I heard 10 years ago. And, you know, probably before that, people were asking the same questions. I know that the research has changed since then, but still, like, we often see the same questions kind of like return, whether that's a Q&A, whether that's an initial assessment or just a question from a current client. There's a lot of stuff that's still around, which, you know, by now I kind of wish kind of like would have disappeared, but that's not the case. So a couple that we're going to talk about today. First of all, is the myth that you can't digest more than 30 grams of protein per sitting. And we're going to get into burning off bigger meals or eating back calories burned. We're going to get into tracking, counting carbs for fat loss, and maybe a little bit more. Let's see. But Christine is going to start off with, you can digest more than 30 grams of protein per sitting.
Yes. So this is actually a myth. You can digest and absorb more than 30 grams of protein per sitting. There's really no limit on how much your body can absorb. It's going to absorb most of it or all of it in some capacity. I'm not really sure where that came from. I don't know if you know.
I mean, I'm assuming it's due to the muscle protein synthesis.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, it, I think that's where people are potentially confusing it is when it comes to muscle protein synthesis, so muscle building, there is an upper limit there. So for example, like if you're consuming 90 grams versus like 30 grams, you're not going to triple the amount of MPS, you know, following your workout, right? Like it's just not going to happen that way. Where you can see increases. So there was a study, there was two studies. So they both were comparing 40 grams of protein versus 20 grams of protein, post-workout on the effects of like muscle protein synthesis. I need to just say MPS because it's too much for me to say. The one study didn't see any increase between 40 and 20 grams. That being said, that study, the people were only training lower body and the volume was lower. Then there was another study where, again, they compared 40 to 20 grams, but they did see about a 20% increase from 40 to 20 grams of protein, but it was because of the training. So they were doing more full body. and their volume was higher. So I'm forgetting the exact numbers, but I think it was somewhere around like that first study had to 10 sets versus this study had like 16 to 20, right? So they're just using more. It's more intense. So they did see that increase following that type of workout. So it more so comes down to like what your workout looks like. So that is where like the upper limit is, right? So we can see slight increases, but it's more so due to the type of training that you're doing. So my advice here is just to base your protein off your body weight. So typically I say 0.7 to 1 gram per pound of body weight. The leaner you are, the more you want. And then also if you're like training really hard, I would like to see you probably closer to that 1 gram. And then distributing it evenly across the day. So that's going to affect muscle protein synthesis and things like satiety. So like keeping you full, right? Plus you don't want to have like a massive amount of protein in one sitting. It can affect digestion and like just make you blow and not feel really good. So I would just try and spread it out evenly. You can do a little bit more following your workout, but anywhere between that like 30 to 40 gram range is solid.
For sure. That's basically what we do as well. And just because we're, you know, you work with pounds, we work with kilos over here. So for our European friends, so that range, that's 0.7 to 1 gram per pound of body weight. It's just about 1.5 up to 2.2 grams per kilo of body weight. I actually got shit for this on Instagram a couple of days ago.
Did you?
Yeah, I posted a reel about like protein intake. I kind of like figuring out like that sweet spot. I use like the 2.2, so the 1 gram per pound of body weight. I got this like super long comment how I was crazy and that it was way too much and blah, blah, blah. And that a 200-pound person would then have to eat like 400 grams of protein. So I actually messaged him because I wasn't like somehow I couldn't tag him in the comments. So I messaged him. I was like, you're 100% right, but I'm going off grams per kilo of body weight. And then he's like, oh, shit, that's true. That makes sense, you know? And then he deleted the comment. I was like, okay, well.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. That's good. See, this is how you handle people on Instagram.
Yeah, just be nice, you know? But no, like that's why I wanted to clarify it, because I don't want someone to all of a sudden go like, oh shit, I got to eat like 400 grams of protein. However, this is one thing that I wanted to bring up, because this is kind of like slightly related, because some people think that you can also like overeat protein, right? It's going to make you fat, etc. Well, it's actually not the case. There's been a few protein overfeeding studies, meaning people were purposely put in a calorie surplus, right? They're eating too much in terms of calories for their body activity, etc. They actually did put people on, you know, high amounts, like 400 grams or something. I believe it was like 4.4 grams per kilo of body weight in at least one of the studies. So that's like, for me, that would be like 400 grams of protein, you know, just about. That's crazy. That's not even like, you can't even hit that with normal food, right? Turned out like people actually didn't gain body fat from that. They had a very high like body temperature, but they didn't actually, you know, gain body fat, even though they were in a surplus. They also didn't see any negative health outcomes. So kind of related here, like you can't really overdo protein.
It's very hard.
Yeah, it's very hard. If there's an amount, it's going to be impossible to eat. However, it's still going to take away from your carbs and your fats, right? So we do kind of want to keep things balanced. So if you hit that range that Christine recommended, like 0.7 up to 1 gram per pound of body weight, you're good, basically. If you just divide that, you know, over your meals, 4 or 5 per day, whatever it might be, you should be good. I think that's it for protein, right? Yeah. Cool. Very common myth. Another one. Burning off bigger meals and then eating back calories burned. This is like a huge red flag, you know? You see this around holidays. You see this anytime we overshoot calories and we're not educated about the way things work, right? Like in terms of calories and macros and exercise. All this really does is setting you up for a unhealthy relationship with both food or exercise, or both, really. I don't think it's a good idea to, first of all, burn off bigger meals, because you actually can always include a bigger meal. I don't like calling it cheat meals, and we never do that. And I know some people still like to call it a cheat meal, and I think that's fine. It's whatever you want to call it. But a bigger meal, you know, whether it's high in carbs, whether it's high in fats, or whatever it might be, it's not necessarily bad, right? It just depends on the rest of the day, rest of the week. So why would we have to compensate for having a bigger meal once, at least in terms of calories burned, right? Trying to run off like a piece of cake or something. First of all, you're going to have to do a whole lot of running because you don't burn that many calories through exercise. And then second, if you need to do that every time you have a bigger meal, are you just going to be doing like hours of cardio like every single day? Like, no. I think we can always include bigger meals. And sometimes we include like bigger days, right? Where we do a little bit of like carb cycling or calorie cycling, where we go a little higher during the weekends to allow for flexibility, and then we go lower during the week. That's one way to do it. And I think we need to learn how to be flexible with nutrition, but like trying to burn it off, like it's just not going to be sustainable, right? Plus your fitness tracker doesn't know how many calories you burn. That's another side note, which really should be a point of itself today. And that's that your fitness tracker has no idea how many calories you're burning. They can be beneficial somewhat, and you can definitely compare workouts, for example. But if your fitness tracker says, oh, you burn 6,000 calories today, like, yeah, maybe not, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's impossible, but like I've seen that where it's like, oh, I burned 3,000 calories in today's workout. I'm like, yeah, maybe a couple hundred. So long story short, let's not do that. And the same goes for eating back calories burned. We should be exercising to get better, right? Like you want to get fit, you want to get healthy, you want to improve, whether that's for building muscle or whatever it might be, or performance, you know, or run a faster mile. It doesn't have to be like, okay, let me do this and then like eat back however much I burned. This kind of goes back into the calories burned on your fitness watch. We actually have no idea. So it's very likely that we end up overeating, stalling progress, because I mean, let's be honest, a lot of people are trying to lose weight. What if you would be trying to like eat back everything that you're burning? It's just going to be a mess, really, you know? So long story short, let's not do that. Let's not burn off bigger meals. Let's not eat back calories burned. But instead, let's learn how to include exercise in, you know, sustainable amounts. Let's try to include bigger meals. Even when you're dieting, like, it's cool, you know? But let's not try to punish ourselves for doing that, because we're just not going to set ourselves up for a sustainable relationship, like a good relationship with food or exercise. Anything you want to add there?
Yeah. So when it comes to eating back calories burned, something to keep in mind is that these trackers, so whether it's like your watch, MyFitnessPal, I mean, they kind of link into stuff like this, or calories burned on like machines and stuff like that. Those are actually the most inaccurate, is like the machines. These calories burned that you see on here, this can be up to like 50% off. And there's literally studies done on this. So that can be problematic. If it's up to 50% off and it's like overestimating by like 300 calories, and now you're in a deficit or something like that, you're trying to cut fat, like Johan said, now you're going to pull yourself right out of a deficit, right? So that's problematic to your goals. When you're, you know, calculating calories, right, that is already taken into consideration. Like when you, I guess if you're doing it from like MyFitnessPal, it might not be. But like when you're working with a coach, or like if you go to an online calculator, typically those things are already taking into consideration your exercise, right? So you don't even need to think about it when you see these calories burn on like MyFitnessPal, it's already taken into consideration. And then when it comes to the trackers and calories, like Johan said, it's impossible for them to know exactly how much they're burning because they can't take into consideration your BMR and they can't take into consideration thermic defective food. So they're only really taking into consideration exercise activity and non-exercise activity. And again, that can be up to 50% off. So yeah, it can be something you can kind of look at loosely, you know, how many did I burn this day? You know, just like in terms of like effort of your workouts and things like that. But again, I still just would not put the focus there. It's just something that's just not accurate. So within your exercise and within your nutrition, I would just kind of throw this out the window and not be focusing on that because it can impact your mental health, essentially. People put way too much emphasis here. And then it can impact, you know, relationship with food and exercise and things like that and impact your goals if it is fat loss.
Yeah, definitely. And like we're wearing fitness trackers, like the both of us are, you know, like we're not against fitness trackers and they can be very useful. Especially if you have a step tracker. Like I have to get like a separate one because Whoop doesn't have it.
Yeah.
But like otherwise, that's what I would be using it for mostly, and sleep and all that. But calories burned, just not worth it. I don't use calories burned with any of my clients. Well, how do we know if we're on the right track? Well, if you're losing weight and your goal is to lose weight, then we're probably in a deficit, you know?
Right.
If you're staying the same.
We're already taking that into consideration. Yeah,
exactly. And if we're trying to gain, okay, let's figure out your expected maintenance. Let's slowly bring you up. Okay, cool. If we're now gaining weight and we can control it, we're probably in a surplus. Otherwise, we wouldn't be gaining. So then we kind of have proof, okay, like the energy balance is adjusted based on your activity level, even though we never will know exactly how many calories you burn outside of a lab setting. You don't live in a lab, so let's not worry about it.
Right.
Next myth. Or maybe, yeah, misconception, I would say. I tried tracking, but it didn't work for me. I couldn't eat that little.
Yeah, so this person is typically going off of when they sign up for like MyFitnessPal and they put all their information in, it's spitting out like a really low number. And again, that's problematic. So it's not the tracking. It's like this number from an inaccurate like calculator. So they automatically think that tracking isn't working for them, right? Like it's just an inaccurate number. This, again, the calculators can't take into consideration how much you've currently been eating, right? How your past dieting history looks like, your hormonal health, like all of those types of things. So we see this where it just shoots out this really low number. And on that topic, like me, for example, I've been tracking for years. I took like 1 year off, but I've basically been doing it for like 5-6 years. And within that time, I did a deficit one time. Tracking macros isn't a diet. It's a tool. Right. So people automatically think, you know, tracking macros, I'm in a diet. No, like I have tons of clients who are tracking macros who are not dieting. They're in like a maintenance phase. We're working on habits, basically. And tracking is a really good tool to help people understand what's in the food they're eating, you know, building out meals, just more awareness around food, how much works for them, et cetera. So this is like a common issue where it's not the tracking, it's the inaccuracy of the apps. And then people end up giving up because of that.
Yeah. And I'd love to know why that is, right? Because
yeah,
if you look it up now and like my fitness bell, it's like way too low, you know?
Yeah.
I guess it's that option where you can choose, okay, 1 kilo per week of weight loss.
Right.
Okay, sure. I mean, you know, if we put almost anyone on 1200 calories, they'll definitely lose that much per week, you know?
Right.
It's not going to be sustainable though. And not that 1200 is inherently bad. You know, some people do need to diet on pretty low calories, but like, I feel like those apps are probably just aiming low just to kind of make sure that if someone wants to lose weight, they will lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's the idea I get. Like, I don't see any other logic behind it.
Yeah, I also think that people putting the targets in don't know like a realistic.
Oh, that's a big one too. Yeah.
They put too much, like, you know, 3 pounds a week or like something like that. Yeah. And then yes, it's going to cut your calories a lot because it's just too drastic. It's basically unrealistic. So you're going to end up with a very low caloric intake.
That's a good one too. And overestimating their activity level. That's a big one, I think.
Yes. Yes. I actually, you know, like when I'm calculating clients' macros and calories and things like that, it's always an estimate for number one. Like I don't go off of those numbers, but I always go lower than their activity typically, because sometimes they can, you know, overestimate. If you're going to, you know, use a tracking app, there's two calculators that I think are pretty decent. One is actually the PN calculator. You have to put like maintain weight. If you want to find your maintenance calories, you have to put maintain weight in for that one. I'm forgetting the exact steps, but, so there's the PN one and then there's bmrcalculator.org. I think that's it. Yeah. That's also a pretty decent one and it gives you different formulas. So like Harris Benedict, you know, all these different types of formulas and you can kind of like pick. So usually like, You could do PN and then do the BMR and kind of find the middle. But you also need to understand how much you're eating right now. So tracking for like 7 days and being, you know, very accurate with what you're eating, don't change anything. Like eat exactly the way you've been eating, you know, up until that point. That way you can see, okay, if my maintenance is like 2200, and I'm eating 18, well, I probably want to increase my calories a little bit first, unless you want to diet at like a really low caloric intake. This is why having a coach can be so beneficial because they take all of this out of your hands, right? I mean, they should teach you like what's going on. But there's just so many factors that play into it. But if I was to say two calculators to go off of, it would be PN1, bmrcalculator.org, but also you need to track your food and see how much you're eating right now.
For sure. Definitely. Because that's a big thing. And that's that education part that people don't get when they download MyFitnessPal, you know? There's no context. There's no like, hey, do this or follow these steps, you know, first before actually starting to track. I wish that was the case, mm-hmm. but it's not. And I feel like that's really what sets people up for like failure, actually, you know,
because I actually have a post on this, on that.
Let's link it.
Yeah, we'll link it.
I have a little bit of it. I have like a mini video series on that on YouTube as well. I'll link that too, where I tell people like, this is how you calculate it, but do this first. And it's exactly what you just mentioned. Like start with mm-hmm. that food diary, then try to dial it in, work towards your maintenance. And then if you want to start a cut or, you know, a bulk, you actually know where to start from, right? If you actually are eating like, let's say 1800 and your expected maintenance is 2200, like you said, maybe it's not worth like jumping into a cut right away if you at least want to lose quite a bit of weight, you know?
Right.
But once again, context, and it's going to depend. So if you need more help, reach out. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, I really want to reiterate that again. Tracking isn't just a diet, okay? It's a tool where we can, tracking, you can have more flexibility, okay? It's really easy to have a more flexible diet when you're tracking too, like if you have specific goals. But tracking does not equal diet. It's a good way to know what's in the food you're eating, the portion sizes, knowing exactly what you need. So it's just really important to just not automatically think that it's a diet like keto or carnivore or something like that.
That being said, next point. Cutting carbs is superior for fat loss, since you mentioned keto and carnivore. It's a good segue. I think when we're speaking of diets, like, that's a big misconception too. And that's the number one thing you hear, right? Oh, I just have to cut carbs, right? Let's explain a little like how this works, right? Like, why do people think that it's superior for fat loss? First of all, yeah, you are probably going to lose more weight in the short term. But that's weight loss. It's not necessarily fat loss. What happens when you cut carbohydrate? First of all, that's quite a bit of volume. So you're eating less, there's less food in your stomach. Like, that's a big one already. Now, when you lower fats, that's a little bit less of a difference because fats are, you know, higher in calories. Okay. So you're going to lose that mass of like food in your stomach. Now, with that, you're going to lose water weight. That's partly just from the carbs in your stomach, but also glycogen gets depleted. Carbs stored in your muscle. As you go into a deficit, you start to lose that a little bit as well. And with that, you're going to see loss in water as well, because every gram of carbohydrate stored in the muscle kind of pulls in like 3-ish grams of water. So what happens when you cut carbohydrate? Typically, we see quite a bit of weight loss in the short term. In terms of fat loss, however, there's no difference. As long as you control calories, so as long as you are in a calorie deficit, it doesn't matter if you're high carb or low carb or, you know, relative to your fats. As long as you're in a deficit, you will be losing weight. There's actually no difference between carbs and fats there. However, we still go with a higher carb approach with most of my clients. Now, why is that? Because first of all, protein, we don't want to touch anyway. So protein, we're going to keep at that 1 gram per pound of body weight, or, you know, 2.2 grams per kilo. Maybe slightly higher, so maybe 2.5 grams per kilo if we're in a deficit. But then what's left is carbs and fats. Now, I do work with quite a few people who at least want to get into training or want to actually perform. They're already training, I should say. Now, for that reason, then, fats are not going to be very much of a priority. So fats we can bring down to a minimum. And then what's left is carbohydrates. So we're going to still be cutting carbs, but not because it's carbohydrate. It's because it's lowering your overall calories. But we're trying to get away with as many as possible. So we're trying to keep those in, actually. Does that make sense?
Yipper.
Okay, cool.
Also, it does come down to energy balance, right? How much you're taking in, right? If you love carbohydrates, there is absolutely no reason for you to remove them in order to make progress. And typically, if you're cutting something out that you really like, you will end up binging on it or overeating on it later on. And this is very typical, right? So people who do keto who love carbohydrates, they lose for a period of time and then the diet's over and they're like, and they just go start mowing down a bunch of food and they're overcompensating for the time they lost with the food they loved. And they end up gaining that weight back. So you don't need to cut carbohydrates. If you like carbohydrates, or if you like fats more than carbohydrates, then yeah, you can cut more if you want, but you don't have to. You do not have to cut carbohydrates.
Carbs also include more of the filling options, you know, like potatoes and stuff.
I literally eat potatoes every day.
Yeah. They're great, you know. Like, they're the best. Me too now, especially in the cut. Mm-hmm. But side note on like keto and stuff, like, they work for sure. And keto can definitely be a great tool in some cases. Carnivore, let's not get into that, but no. But keto, it works, you know, but it's that sustainability, like, that's missing for most people. I have yet to talk to someone, and hey, maybe I'll meet someone one day. But so far, since I started coaching, I have not met a single person who did keto on their own or at that. So did keto on their own. So without the proper education, doing it right, you know, who had a good experience with it.
Mm-hmm. Neither. Any client that has come to me that's doing keto, they're doing keto for like 4 or 5 days of the week. And then they're binging like 3 days of the week. I'm not joking. It's literally every client who has come to me doing keto, they're binging on the weekend or like not even the weekend. And it's because it's just simply unsustainable for them. Like I have a client who came to me doing keto, and the goal was to, and he had a very, he had a poor relationship with food because of that. So the goal was to bring him more in balance as far as his diet goes and work on his relationship with food. So that took us 6 months to basically transition from keto. Well, the transition was quicker, but the relationship with food took longer. But when you're transitioning from keto to a more balanced diet, you actually have to take it fairly slow, because you're so glycogen depleted. You know, weight can increase, you know, pretty quickly. And we can see like puffiness and things like that. So you actually have to take it fairly slow. But anyway, we got him into like a really good spot. And finally, I just put him into a deficit, a cut. And he's crushing it. He's like, I've never felt this good. You know, it doesn't feel hard, you know, like the keto is, because he's, you know, he went out for dinner a couple times and he had like a beer, and it's, he's just like, this is unbelievable. I'm like, yeah, I mean, this is what a sustainable diet looks like. Like it doesn't have to be this like grueling process. Yeah. At the end of a diet might feel grueling. But again, you could have a balanced diet, you could have carbohydrates and still lose fat.
Yeah. 100%.
Typically, keto people have fairly poor relationships with food.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, it can most definitely be used in certain scenarios. Certain medical conditions can definitely benefit from keto approach as a tool, or maybe even as a long-term solution. I'm not saying it's not, you know, like unsustainable for everyone.
No.
But the people I talk to typically are trying to lose weight and they just can't. Because why? Well, people want to eat carbs and now they have to cut it out, and it just turns into a binge fest and we can't sustain it. And we're just going around in circles.
Right.
You know,
that client, like he had a lot of body fat to lose right off the bat. So I understood why. And he did too. Like he's like, it really worked for me at the beginning because like he had a lot to lose, and it can be a really good tool
for sure
for people who have a lot of body fat to lose at the beginning, but it became unsustainable for him. So it worked until it didn't. Right. Yeah. And so at that point, the coach should have started transitioning him to a more balanced diet. And he actually was like telling them to, and they weren't. And so, yeah, once we did, he's killing it. He's feels great. His workouts are good. Like it's really awesome.
Yeah. And that's the thing that pisses me off. And I was literally watching these videos yesterday on Instagram. There's these keto like zealots who like, it's the only approach, right? It's keto and nothing else. And then they shit on everything else. And it's like people like, I'm not even going to mention who, cause it's not worth it. But like this dude's like a doctor, which had, you know, no training in nutrition, like actually like completely different, you know, job, who's like promoting this keto diet and now carnivore. And then keto is like for, you know, for the masses, and carnivore is like the next level thing. But like in those cases, like that's the only thing, and that's right. The only thing they do. And to them, it doesn't fucking matter how someone feels. It's like, as you mentioned, like your client, like they were not in a sustainable place anymore. They created an unhealthy relationship with food. They knew something had to change. And that coach probably did as well. But because they're so sold in like, it just has to be keto, they actually stick to it, even though it actually messes up the person. And then it can take a long, long time to fix that.
Yeah.
little side rant here, but like, once again, like, it can be a tool, but for most people, it's just not sustainable. Right. And hey, if it is for you, great. I think that's plenty for the week. What do you think?
I think we're good. I think we're going to do more episodes like this. So if you have one that you're curious about, send it our way. Again, link in both our bios. You can ask a question there, or you can simply DM us or anything like that, and we'll talk about it.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening. If you want to help us grow the show, please make sure to leave us a 5-star rating or share this episode on your Instagram stories. Now, if at any point you feel like you need more help, you can always reach out to Christine or myself directly via any of the links in our show notes, because we're here to help. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.